The Catra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of the Catra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we are taking on, well, maybe one of the most critical topics for global security, Joseph M. Syracuse's really comprehensive work on nuclear weapons.
Yeah, and our goal isn't just, you know, a history lesson. It's about pulling out the absolute core truths about, well, humanity's most powerful and, frankly, terrifying invention. We need to grasp how these weapons didn't just alter warfare, but how they fundamentally rewrote the rules of, like, international existence.
That's really the crux of it, isn't it? Since 1945, nuclear weapons have become less about actual military use and much more about politics, psychology, deterrence. If you want to understand modern security challenges, the Cold War echoes, the current hotspots in Asia, whatever you have to get your head around the nuclear factor, it's this massive paradox. I mean, this technology could literally end civilization, right? But at the same time, it's credited with keeping the peace, relatively speaking, between the major powers for, what, 70 plus years now?
Exactly. A kind of security built on the absolutely terrifying idea of total destruction.
It's
unsettling.
And the person guiding us through this incredibly complex and often frightening landscape is Joseph M. Syracuse. He's a distinguished professor of human security and international diplomacy at RMIT University.
Yeah, and Syracuse's perspective is quite valuable because he doesn't just look at it from one angle, like just history or just politics. His work pulls together decades of deep research into, you know, Cold War diplomacy, U.S. foreign policy.
Yeah.
But he also understands the technical side, the physics involved. He's got access to the documents, the declassified stuff.
But he also gets the strategic implications.
Right. He grasps what it all means.
What I really appreciate is his ability to synthesize everything. He takes these concepts that can sound really abstract and jargony, like, you know, second strike capability or strategic stability, and he just lays them out with this stark clarity. He makes the logic of deterrence feel less like a textbook theory and more like this heavy historical reality, reminding you just how close we've come to things going wrong.
Precisely. He forces you to see the bomb not in isolation, but as this complex thing tied up with fear, national pride, high-stakes political maneuvering. So the main aim of his book, Nuclear Weapons, is really to cut through all that complexity, to give us an accessible but still really solid history. It's basically an essential primer on how these things were developed, how they spread, and why they still matter so much today.
It takes you on this whole journey, doesn't it? Starting with the science and the politics during World War II, the whole Manhattan Project story, then tracing it through the massive buildup during the Cold War, those moments of absolute brinkmanship, and then it brings us right up to today with all the worries about proliferation, arms control, rogue states.
And the central argument, which is just so important, is that you can't just view nuclear weapons as military tech. They are fundamentally political, psychological, even moral phenomena. They completely reshape national security and, well, our chances of survival. Syracuse is basically asking, how do we live with this thing? How do we manage this constant shadow?
Okay, let's unpack that journey a bit, starting right at the beginning. The birth and initial use, it was this incredible, almost scary convergence of theoretical physics, fission, EMMC, all that stuff, and just intense geopolitical pressure during World War II.
Yeah, you had scientists, many refugees fleeing fascism in Europe, who realized the potential of splitting the atom.
Yeah.
And the big fear was, what if Hitler gets this first? That fear really drove people like Leo Szilard and famously Albert Einstein to write that letter to President Roosevelt back in 39.
That was the spark, really. The moment the U.S. government basically said, okay, we need to do this. And that led to the Manhattan Project.
And the scale of that project. It's hard to even imagine now.
Yeah.
We're talking a massive multi-billion dollar effort, top secret, involving industry, science, the military, all leading up to that Trinity test.
Yeah.
July 1945, New Mexico desert.
When the theory became this terrifying, world-changing reality.
And that led, of course, to the decision to use the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, still one of the most fiercely debated decisions ever. Syracuse lays out both sides pretty clearly. You have the conventional military argument. It was needed to avoid a land invasion of Japan, which, you know, might have cost millions of lives on both sides.
Right. The argument about saving lives by using the ultimate weapon.
But then there's the other interpretation, the geopolitical one, that the bombs weren't just about ending the war with Japan, which was arguably already close to defeat. They were also a signal, a demonstration of American power aimed squarely at the Soviet Union, right as the Cold War was starting.
The first move in the nuclear chess game.
Exactly. But whatever the primary reason, that American monopoly didn't last long. August 1949, the Soviets test their own bomb. total shock in the West.
And that just kicked off the arms race into high gear, didn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Massive escalation. Yeah. And this is where the technology really drove the strategy, as you said. We went very quickly from fission bombs measured in kilotons, thousands of tons of TNT, to fusion bombs, the H-bomb. Now we're talking megatons.
Millions of tons of TNT. Weapons that could not just destroy cities, but potentially threaten whole continents. It was a completely different level of risk.
And with that kind of destructive power, you needed absolute certainty that you could hit back if attacked first. That's why both the U.S. and the Soviets developed the nuclear triad. You spread your weapons out, long-range bombers, land-based intercontinental ballistic missiles, or ICBMs, and submarine-launched ballistic missiles, SLBMs.
So no matter how bad the first strike was, you could still launch a devastating counterattack.
Precisely. That guaranteed retaliatory strike is the bedrock of the whole Cold War security system. Mutually Assured Destruction, MAD.
Everyone's heard the acronym MAD, but Syracuse really makes you feel the chilling logic behind it. It sounds kind of rational on paper, but it depends on both sides being credibly willing to essentially commit mutual suicide.
That's the paradox. The core idea is if both sides know for sure that even if they attack first, they will still be destroyed and return that second strike capability, then starting the war becomes, well, irrational. Insane, really.
As Syracuse puts it, the logic of deterrence requires the illogic of mutual annihilation.
Perfectly put.
And that whole terrifying system was pushed right to the edge during the Cuban Missile Crisis in October 1962. Syracuse uses this as the prime example of brinkmanship.
Right. Brinkmanship, pushing a confrontation right to the absolute limit, daring the other side to back down or face nuclear war. But the really scary lesson from Cuba wasn't just the high-stakes standoff between Kennedy and Khrushchev. It was how fragile the whole thing was.
How easily things could have gone wrong.
Exactly. Human error, stress, miscommunication, technical glitches. There were several moments, like with a Soviet submarine captain nearly launching a nuclear torpedo, where pure luck or individual judgment prevented catastrophe. It showed the system wasn't foolproof. Far from it.
After that near disaster, there was definitely a stronger push for some kind of control, right? But the nuclear genie was already out of the bottle. More countries were developing the capability.
Yeah, the original five nuclear powers, US, Soviets, UK, France, China, weren't going to be the only ones forever. So the big institutional response was the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, the NPT, in 1968.
Often called the Grand Bargain.
That's it. The deal was basically, the existing nuclear powers promised to work towards disarmament eventually, and the non-nuclear countries promised not to develop weapons. In return, the non-nuclear states would get access to peaceful nuclear technology, like for energy. It's still the main framework we have today, even though it's under a lot of strain.
Okay, so the Cold War had this terrifying stability, in a way, because it was bipolar U.S. versus USSR. What does Syracuse say happened after the Soviet Union collapsed in 91? How did the nuclear landscape change?
Well, he describes it as shifting into a kind of full-blown anarchy. That bipolar clarity of Nies sort of vanished. It became a more unpredictable, multipolar world. The risk of a massive, all-out nuclear war between Russia and the U.S. probably went down.
But the risk of smaller, regional nuclear conflicts went up.
Drastically increased, yes. And that's where we are now, dealing with these really difficult contemporary challenges. You have the India-Pakistan situation, two nuclear-armed neighbors with a history of conflict and very different ideas about when they might use these weapons.
Super volatile.
Extremely. And then you have states like North Korea actively building its arsenal, or the ongoing concerns about Iran's nuclear program. These are states operating outside or pushing the boundaries of that NPT framework.
And then there's the threat Syracuse calls the ultimate nightmare, nuclear terrorism.
Right. And he's careful here. He points out that building a sophisticated nuclear bomb, like the one states have, is incredibly difficult for a terrorist group. The real plausible threat is probably the dirty bomb.
Which isn't a nuclear explosion, but
it's a conventional bomb, like dynamite, packed with radioactive material. The explosion spreads that material over an area. It wouldn't cause the same immediate mass destruction as a nuclear blast, but it would create panic, long-term contamination, huge cleanup costs. It's a weapon of terror and disruption.
Okay, so stepping back from the detailed history, if we had to boil down Syracuse's main messages, what are the key themes that really stand out?
I think the first, and maybe the most fundamental, is that paradox we talked about, the paradox of nuclear security. Our current global peace, such as it is, rests on the credible threat of complete annihilation. It's a system built on psychology, on fear, on ethical tightropes. We had to constantly manage this self-destruct capability just to survive.
It's a fragile foundation. And the second theme, which feels really relevant today, is how deeply politics and technology are intertwined here. These weapons aren't just about military capability, they are political instruments above all else.
Absolutely. Decisions about building them, deploying them, threatening to use them, it's all driven by things like national prestige, fear, diplomatic leverage. They're tools of statecraft. The technology itself, like the H-bomb, fundamentally changes the political game for everyone.
Technology changes politics, not just war. And the third theme.
That has to be the ever-present danger of miscalculation. The Cuban Missile Crisis is the ultimate proof. The biggest danger maybe isn't a rational leader deciding to launch a first strike out of the blue. It's an accident, a technical error, a misread signal, human stress and fallibility under pressure.
Like you said, the systems aren't foolproof because humans are involved.
Exactly. Even the best systems are vulnerable.
Siracusa really has a knack for summing up these huge ideas in ways that really stick with you. We should probably highlight a few of those key lines or ideas.
Yeah. He does. I think one that captures the core contradiction is something like, nuclear weapons represent the ultimate expression of human ingenuity applied to the most destructive purpose imaginable. It's that genius versus folly thing.
Right. And his summary of METI is just so concise. The logic of deterrence requires the illogic of mutual annihilation. That just cuts right to the heart of it, doesn't it?
It really does. And there's that famous line often attributed to Einstein, which Siracusa uses to point out the gap between the tech and our thinking. The bomb changed everything except our way of thinking. We developed this revolutionary weapon, but still often try to apply old strategic rules to it.
Mm. And finally, a central point again. Nuclear weapons are ultimately political instruments, not military ones. Their real power isn't just in the bang, it's in the influence they give, the leverage.
So thinking about all this, how does understanding this history actually help us, you know, in real life? What's a practical application?
Well, for one thing, it makes you a much more informed citizen of the world, right? Reading this gives you the basic vocabulary and the historical context to understand the news headlines about Russia or China or North Korea's nuclear posture. You can see beyond the surface level fear and understand a bit more about the strategic dynamics at play, the constraints they're under.
That's a really good point. And it also, I think, really sharpens your critical thinking. Grappling with these huge paradoxes like, how can the threat of destruction actually prevent war? It forces you to think in more nuanced ways. You learn to see the shades of gray in complex policy debates, not just the black and white arguments.
Yeah, you get better at weighing the hawk versus dove perspectives, seeing the logic in different positions. And finally, those lessons from crisis management, especially from the Cuban Missile Crisis, they apply way beyond nuclear strategy. Well, understanding the risks of pushing things to the brink, the vital importance of clear communication, anticipating human error. Those are crucial lessons for anyone involved in high-stakes decision-making, whether it's in business or medicine or anywhere where managing risk is key. If I had to share one final thought that really hit me, it was just how incredibly fragile that Cold War nuclear peace actually was. It wasn't some automatic, stable thing. It was this terrifyingly delicate balancing act, constantly managed, constantly at risk from human imperfection. It hammered home that the nuclear age isn't over. It's a permanent condition we have to actively, carefully manage always.
Yeah. For me, the lasting insight from Siracusa is how he really reframes these weapons. They stop being just pieces of hardware and become this profound force, political, social, psychological, that has fundamentally rewired how global power works. And the biggest question, the one he leaves us with, is how do we continue to live with these things without ultimately dying by them?
Mm.
That question hasn't gone away. It's maybe more critical now than ever.
A really powerful deep dive into, yeah, a truly essential subject. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ecatra Foundation.